right, everyone. Welcome to Seat of Your Pants. We finally have a name for this podcast. And while we are moving forward with things, we are still encountering all kinds of fucking technical difficulties. So I would say blame Kai for that, but I can't. You're going to have to blame me for it. Essentially, the premise of this show, we've got to figure it out. We are going to be bringing you the finest entertainment in audio voyeurism from the adult entertainment industry. Unprepared, unpredictable, unparalleled. We all often fly by the seat of our pants, and this podcast should be no different. Greetings, everyone. My name is Jay. I'm one of the owners of Why Not. With me, as always, is the amazing Mistress Kai. How you doing today?
Hello, hello. I'm doing great. Thank you. How are you doing?
I'm good. I mean, I'm not, but I am. For all intents and purposes of the show, I'm doing fucking fantastic. Okay. All right. I'm with us. With us today, we are really, really thrilled to have performer Lance Hart. I would like to give you a glowing intro, but I think Kai knows you better than me, obviously. So why don't I just pass the reins on to Kai real quick, give Lance the intro that he deserves, and we can just jump into things and figure out what the fuck we're going
to
do.
Well, I don't want to go through all of the checking all the boxes, this award and that award, da 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 da. I just want to say I think he is an absolutely amazing human being. And I thought he was amazing before I actually even knew who he was, because our friend Brittany Andrews kept telling me about this guy. And she was like, he's so thoughtful and people call him Papa Sobriety. And he cares about people in the industry so much. And she kept telling me about this amazing human being. And I knew him long before we actually even spoke on the phone. So that's sort of what I want people to know about him. I mean, I think there's all these other wonderful things that I hope we'll talk about, but that's the intro that I want to give, because I think, especially in this industry, he's just an absolutely fantastic, thoughtful, caring human being. And I hope that's what we showed today.
Well, thanks. That's really nice of you. I've done a great job hiding my villainy. All my villainy. You guys don't know. It's so far, so good.
I think we all have don't we?
Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, basically, while, you know, this is a new podcast, so I thank everybody who takes a shot with us here and acts as a guinea pig of sorts, so to speak, because we're really just kind of having a driverless bus here. Yes, I may be the host, Kai may be the co-host, but you know, we really just want to provide something that's fun and interesting and give all of our listeners, this is audio only, not video, all of our listeners something that they can really, you know, feel like they're a fly on the wall about. So, you know, what would cause Kai to say all these wonderful things about you? I mean, I know you to be a great person as well, with many in the industry's interests at heart. And, you know, you've been a mainstay for quite a while. So, you know, please feel free to talk about yourself, give yourself, you know, the stage here.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't think I'm that good of a person. it's been a busy couple years, I guess, with not work stuff, like doing the service part. What I mean is like working with the Free Speech Coalition and helping people get sober and, that kind of stuff. So I've been keeping busy with that, but like anybody, I just want to feel good. So it's like, I don't know. So I do that shit, but it makes me feel good. So with the FSC stuff, it's like, when the pandemic happened and then everybody was watching the fun part of the pandemic, like everybody's watching Tiger King and like learning how to bake and shit. At the Free Speech Coalition, being on the board there is actually a really easy gig. You just like, you're supposed to go to like four meetings a year and vote on shit for the Free Speech Coalition is the trade association for porn, if people don't know that. So that's what it is. So we're supposed to like kind of, nobody really cares about that stuff, you know what I mean? But I do. And those people do. So anyway, all of a sudden there's a global pandemic and we have to like, it's on us to figure out what the rules are for making porn when there's a pandemic, you know? So it got really intense all of a sudden. We had to do Zoom meetings and research, and I'm a pornographer. I'm not a doctor or a scientist or a policy writer for sure. So, but I had to learn, you know what I mean? Instead of everyone else on the committee, and some of them, some of those people are super smart. And, so it got to be fun, you know, so that kind of, I don't know, that kind of shit, keeps me going, I guess, like the service part of life. But I don't know if I'm a good person. I just think that's what, it's just a trick to feel good.
Well, at the very least, you're doing important work. I mean, this is something that, you know, impacts a lot of people in the industry. And this year, this past year at least, you know, it fucked a lot of people up one way or another.
Oh, yeah. One way or another changed everything.
Yeah. It either fucked up your bottom line or your mental state of being, or in a lot of cases, your own physical health. Because, I mean, even if you didn't catch COVID, a lot of people put on weight. I mean, you read nowadays some of the health issues that a lot of people are dealing with that were as a direct result either of catching COVID or of just not being physically active or socially active for a year. And it impacts so many people in so many profound ways. And considering the fact that as an industry, you know, there's a lot of people where it really didn't change anything, because if you work solo and you're used to doing everything at home on your own, then you've thrived immediately. But for many others, it didn't. And, you know, we don't really, I guess, see that all the time from where we're at.
Yeah. And even for the people that thrived, I've been broke and I've also had money. So like when I was broke, if people said, oh, but you know, when you get a bunch of money dumped on you, you get new problems, I would always think like, yeah, right. Like what kind of, whatever. That's not that big. Like give me those problems. That sounds awesome. But, if you take someone who's already a little fragile and they're solo porn performer and they're there, they're doing it because they don't like people or dealing with anybody. And then all of a sudden their income goes up by like 10 or 20 times because OnlyFans blew up and all of a sudden they're rich. It can get real weird real quick for a lot of my friends. You know, it's like a blessing for sure. It's better to have a bunch of resources than not, but someone who's used to making $4,000 a month all of a sudden makes $40,000 or $50,000 a month. They start solving all their problems with the money doesn't solve all the problems, you know, like buying stuff and, oh, I can do this and do that. And then it's really frustrating. And then there's the feeling of I spent all the money. Ah, you know what I mean? It just kind of, it's weird, right? It's new problems that people are just going to have to figure out how to solve, you know? So it's interesting.
I definitely went through that because I grew up a very poor kid. And I mean, we would eat syrup sandwiches. I was that kind of poor kid. And then in my young adulthood, I was married and we did really well. And I would say, you know, we were wealthy. And I say it all the time that money doesn't fix things. It just gives you another set of problems. And then it also exacerbates all your shit. And I know it did for me. It certainly exacerbated my shit. And then with all these other problems that comes with having that money and not knowing how to handle that money or how to handle your shit with money and have access to things you shouldn't and substances maybe that you shouldn't have access to. I completely understand what you were just saying. It's really hard to handle that much of a leap when you've grown up with, you know, nothing. And then all of a sudden you can just get whatever you want and do whatever you want. And you're pacifying all your shit with that money. When you said that about the money, I'm like, yeah, that's exactly what happened to me.
Yeah, it gets weird for sure. I know I was when I was broke, like couldn't afford hot dogs. Like I was eating rice for like a month. Just like stealing condiments from fast food places so I could put them on the rice because all I could eat was rice. It was bad. I was broke. I laughed a lot that during that time, like belly laughed like so hard my face hurt. And I had a small group of friends and because there's less like opportunity, you know, to like, oh, I should be working on this. I should be doing that. I should be doing it. There's less beating myself up. It was just kind of survive, just get through the day, just raw survival. So my head and my feelings weren't wrapped up with so much. And I had the freedom to just kind of be in the moment and laugh a lot. And now I mean, I don't know, I'm not like rich, but I can kind of buy whatever I want and do whatever I want and eat whatever I can definitely eat whatever I want. I can definitely afford that, like no doubt. And it's, I'm grateful for it for sure. It's really nice. And especially if I get sick and I need to go to a doctor, I can just fix it. My cat gets sick. Okay, let's just solve the problem. We can solve it. That's the beauty of it. But getting back to like laughing a lot is hard. It's you get lost in that. And then in the end, what matters? I don't know. You know,
I want to show Lance something that I wrote not 20 minutes ago. I don't know if you can see my sloppy handwriting. What can make you belly laugh?
What can make you belly laugh?
The fact that you were saying about belly laughing, I'm like, holy cow, I just wrote that. I wanted to know what makes your belly laugh. I can't believe that you're just sort of the universe has you talking about that. So what does make you belly laugh since you mentioned it?
That's the thing, not so much. I mean, I'm a happy dude and content for sure. Everything's nice and peaceful, but that like ruckusy, I'm laughing so hard my face hurts and this is taking me over. It has been a while, to tell you the truth. I'm not like super bummed about it, but it's something on my mind a lot. I'm like, man, I used to laugh so hard my face hurt at least once a week.
Something like that. Yeah. Something like that I tend to do when I'm in the company of other people, when I'm at shows or events and I'm in a group and like we've been out and drinking or whatever, and it's 3 a.m. or whatever. You know, this is the kind of stuff that, you know, I live for in a lot of ways, because you just don't forget these memories at all, I think. And I haven't, you know, really, I mean, I've had some great phone conversations with people over the last year and a half or so. I've only taken one real trip since the pandemic began. And that was, I went to Phoenix back in April and hung out with a bunch of industry people. You know, Vegas is next up on my docket, which we discussed. So I'm very much looking forward to that. You know, we're going to have a group together. And, you know, these are the kinds of memories and networking that, you know, is just so, I think, important in general. I mean, in this industry, yes, but in general, because, yeah, I'm known for trying to make people laugh. And, you know, I'm pretty successful at it. Maybe not right now or during this podcast, but hey, when I'm in the right setting, and, you know, I'm good to go and I've got an audience, I'm not satisfied until people are practically throwing up from laughing.
Look, you make me laugh all the time.
It's important.
I'm curmudgeonly. You know, I'm pretty curmudgeonly. You get me laughing all the time. But I think that you access, and we talked about this before, you access this sort of, I have this man child that dwells deep within me, and you sort of access that. You get me laughing all the time. You get me laughing just through text messaging sometimes.
I'm pretty good at that. You know, there's only so many selfies, you know, from the waist down that I can send you and get you laughing. But, you know, so let me, I'm going to ask you this, Lance. So how long have you been in the industry, and what kind of, you know, for the people that don't know you, what kind of stuff do you shoot and what kind of stuff are you looking to do now that we're starting to return to normal-ish again?
Let's say it started in 2007. So it was 2021. It's been a while. And I started as a performer for a gay porn company called Sean Cody. I did that for 2 years as a contract model, and I really enjoyed it. It's great. And I liked it so much, I bought a camera as soon as the contract was up, and just started making my own porn. And when I was making my own porn, at first it was like femdom fetish porn, because that's sort of what gets me off the most. And originally, honestly, it was like to cut down on my hooker budget. I was like, if I, you know, spend in probably too much money on like paying strippers to be mean to me. Well, when you're budgeting for hookers, it's important to know that you're going to spend more than you plan every time. And especially if you have like kinks, you know, because you're going to get, you're going to pay one lady, because, and you're like, okay, I want her to do this thing, this thing, this thing, wear this thing, wear that thing. And I want to come. And I know all of this is vaguely illegal, but not that illegal. So how do we get this done? And then you're going to like try to like think you're on the way to meet one, and then they flake, and then you meet one eventually, and then they don't look anything like their pictures. And you're like, oh man, it's really frustrating. It's very frustrating. Like all my friends are hookers now, and they talk about John's sucking, like being like, the Johns are terrible, man. They flake on you. They don't keep appointments. They don't do that. But what you got to remember is, if you're a good hooker, you're like a gem. I mean, like, you're like one in a million. Most are like oh God, it's terror. It's so hard because it's illegal. And it's like, it is what it is. So I was dealing with that. I was like a gay porn star, quote unquote, on a site. And I thought, why don't I just, oh, and also I was unemployable. I couldn't keep a job. Cause I just, I'm a little like, I don't know, mentally weird or something. I don't know. I just, now I go to bed at like midnight and I wake up around 9-ish. It's really no big deal. If I have to get up at 6, I'll get up at 6. It's no big deal. But that's new for me. I'm 42. That's like when I turned 40 that started. Up until then, I would like time to go to bed. It's like 11 or midnight and my head would just switch on. And I was just like wide the fuck awake till about 4 a.m. And I just couldn't. And I was like super creative during those hours. And like, if I could have worked overnight, I probably would have been doing pretty good, but I couldn't find anyway. So I just got fired a lot for oversleeping and not showing up and then being weird at the work, at the job, and couldn't keep a job, but I was doing pretty good in gay porn. Anyway, bought a camera and I thought, okay, we keep getting fired. We're spending all our money on hookers. Porn's the only place I've worked where people are like, hey, you're pretty good at this. And it's pretty loose. Like you can be 20 minutes late to a porn set and you're on time. I mean, you're fine. You know what I mean? It's like not that big deal. You can be an hour late with an apology and you're fine. You know what I mean? Like it's still, you can't do it every time, but like once in a while, if you're like an hour late, it's like, oh dude, shit happens, whatever. Let's make this movie. You know what I mean? So it's very forgiving. I'm sober. I've been sober since I was 19, and porn is in general a sober workplace. Which surprises a lot of people who aren't in porn, but in general, it's very frowned upon for everybody to be fucked up on set. So it's kind of nice to like be in a sober work environment. I don't know. As opposed to like restaurants, if you work in a restaurant, everybody's fucked up. I mean, if you order a burger, the person bringing you your burger is on so many drugs and booze. It's amazing. They're standing. I mean, that's just the truth of it. They're whacked out of their minds because they're dealing with angry customers all day. It's terrible. So anyway, I'm beating around the bush. So I get a camera, buy a camera. Now I'm like, fuck, all right, spent the money on a camera. Instead of getting a hooker, I'm going to put an ad out. Instead of reading a hooker ad, I'm going to be the one with the ad. And I'm going to put an ad out on Backpage that says, looking for fattest models. I'll put you in pantyhose, just step right on my balls, and I'll give you $50 an hour. Right? I have no idea what you pay people or what how this works. I had been on many gay porn sets, but I didn't know how do you get started, right?
Right, right.
So, and miraculously, someone responded to my ad, and then a minute later, my ad gets taken down because Backpage is like, you can't really do that. You know what I mean? Like, you get the fuck out of here. But one lady responded to my ad. I'm like, yeah, come over, whatever. And I expect her to not be the most attractive person because it's like 3 a.m. on a Wednesday. And she just responded my Backpage ad. And I'm like, I was like, well, I'm about to go spend what little money I shouldn't, like my bill money, on strippers and hookers to hopefully get them to do dirty stuff to me. So like instead, maybe this one that comes, it'll be, or anyway, you know, whatever. So she shows up and she's so hot. She's like crazy, like a fitness model. She's cute and she's got freckles and just,
wow.
What are you even doing in my apartment? Like her deal was her boyfriend had just gotten angry and abusive at home and she had a small daughter and she had to move. And she didn't have any money to just kind of get to the next apartment, you know, like she just needed to kind of make a quick $500 just to like get it going. And she was on Backpage looking at hooker ads at that same moment thinking, well, I guess I'm going to sell my ass tonight. This is what we're doing. You know what I mean? I guess this is where we're at. And she said, well, fetish, stepping on balls, that sounds like doable. That's better than like getting fucked in the ass tonight. That's like where she was at. So we met at the perfect time. And I was like, hey, I've gotten fucked in the ass for a living at Sean Cody. I swear we're going to be cool and we're not going to do anything you don't want to do. I'm going to make some videos that I'm honestly going to jerk off to. And I'm going to get off to this. I'm just being a pervert tonight. But I am going to try to make money with them. And I am going to pay you tonight. And I paid her in cash because, again, I didn't know what I was doing. And she was cool. And so for the next 3 days, I just gave her all my money. I think I gave her like $2,500 because I just, and I literally didn't have it. This is like bill money. This is like, I took one of those payday advances that you're not, you know, they're like where the interest is like 1,000%, you know, I just couldn't believe this really hot fitness model, cute chick was totally down to come over to my apartment and give me hand jobs and step on my balls and wear pantyhose and make me eat my cum and fuck me in the butt with strap-ons, all the stuff I wanted to do. I was like, what? And yeah, so a great week. And then she was good after that. She's like, hey, thank you so much. You saved me and my daughter. You'll probably never see me again, but high five, you're cool. And that was it. I never asked her to do a scene again because she's very clear. I'm probably not gonna do this anymore, but it was fun. You know, that's it. And so we left on good terms. And then I'm like, well, what the fuck do I do with this? So Clips for Sale was like the only spot for amateur porn at the time. This is like 2009, 2008, maybe. I don't know. And I had bought some shit on Clips for Sale. So I was like, well, I put it there. So I put it on Clips for Sale. And then like 3 days later, I made $5,000. Mm-hmm. And I was like, whoa, I just doubled all that money I didn't have.
Great investment.
Like, whoa. And I, you know how it is when shit like that, like if you buy a stock and then it doubles Woo-hoo! An hour later, you're like, I'm going to get rich. Yeah. And then it doesn't keep doing that. I mean, that's just like a one-off. I just got lucky. And the first payout for Clips for Sale was about a month away. You know what I mean? Cause it pays out once a month. So I was still going to miss all my bills, even though I had this like $5,000 coming. And by the time the payout hit, it was something like $8,000. And I was like, which is more money than I was making at all the day jobs I was getting fired from. So I knew I was onto something. I was like, I got to make this work. I had to take on a business partner, which I don't suggest anybody doing. I should have just paid all my bills late and sucked up the fees, you know, but took on a business partner. And then we had to split the money with him from then on out. And for the next 2 years, I just made porn. Kept adding like, oh, I'll do gay porn too. Now I'll make other kinds of porn and this and that and this and that and tried this and that. I'm in a place now where I've been performing this whole time for other companies. And then I started directing my own stuff and a little bit for kink.com and a little for here and there. And now I'm looking to hire more directors so I can just sit at home with my cats and pay them to do the work. So that's kind of my next goal is how do I do almost nothing for work? Just kind of run it. And I'm like 30% of the way there.
I don't know. Let's talk about something that might be pretty funny. Can you talk about like your most, not even embarrassing, just the most ridiculous thing that happened on set? Can you share a funny story about that?
Man, I could ask that a lot. So I'm trying to think of one that I haven't said on a podcast. And there's so many, but now my mind's going blank because there's just so many. I mean, every day, like on set, there's always
something. I got a better question. So I used to run a trade show in San Francisco from like 2008 to 2011. And we actually worked with kink.com. They just purchased the Armory a couple of years earlier. And we would have our closing party at the Armory building. And this was like 2008 to 2011. You would have been in the industry at the time. Were you ever at any of our parties at the Armory? It would have been June.
I don't know. I don't think I was at one of your parties at the Armory. I was at a lot of parties in the Armory.
Sure.
I did the upper floor thing, I think, once or twice. I was there for Pride 1 year. So there's just a lot going on at the Armory. And most of that time, when the last years of the Armory being the Armory, I was living in Tampa, Florida. So they would fly me out to have me do like a bunch of scenes a few days apart. So I would just kind of live in the Armory. Like they would just put me up in one of the rooms. And so I lived there like there'd be like months at a time where I was living there part like half the time, like 2 weeks of the month. I'm just back at the Armory. You know what I mean? And so it was fun. It was a fun place to be. There's nothing like it. I wish we could have another thing like that where it's like a porn building. It's just like a big ass building that's like dorms and a kitchen and a rec room and porn getting shot and everything's just so you just meet. It was better than any convention I've ever been to, was just go just being there working. Because you meet so many people just in the shower. I mean the showers are co-ed, so it was like a group shower. So you like just when you're like what like the days I wasn't working and I was just living there, I would wake up, bring my toothbrush and my soap and whatever down the hall, like it's like a dorm room, and then get into the group shower. And then someone else jumps in the shower next to you and they're like, hey, can you pass the shampoo? And da, 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 da. And you're like, oh, you're Aiden Starr. You know, wow, I've looked at your porn for the last 15 years. It's amazing. You're here. And then someone else would jump in and like, hey, what are you working on today? And you're all kind of showering and oh, I'm getting gangbanged for the da, da, da. Oh, cool. I'm torturing so-and-so and da, da, da. You know, it's really cool. There's nothing like it, but I don't think we'll ever have something like that again. So many people hate on porn. That having like an address where like this is where it's happening, it was just such a target, you know. So they had to move out, you know, and make it more secret, which is a bummer. But
it's really unfortunate. I just think a lot of things are moving backwards.
You know,
I mean, obviously the golden age of porn, I think, is just long gone behind us.
Yeah, it's going to be a different golden age. Whatever happens next, it'll be more virtual, I think. Assuming the way things are going now, you know.
Yeah.
It's almost like we've been set back even beyond like the 70s and 80s. Like we are going back to this sort of puritanical 50s sort of push across the country. You know, we're looking at laws in Texas where, you know, you can't dance until you're 21. And they're trying to take here in Pennsylvania, you know, they're trying to clamp down on women's reproductive health care. Mm-hmm. You know, there's like this, I don't know what's going to happen to the industry in that regard. You know, it's stronger and there's more money than ever and there's a lot of lobbying for it. But there's a lot of money on the other side and there's this crazy war on porn going on now. And I was wondering what you guys thought about all that, because you guys have been so deeply entrenched for so many years. Like, what do you foresee coming?
Yeah, it's tricky. I mean, there's a lot of money to be made in hating porn, mm-hmm. but it's not direct. You don't get paid. Like, if you're in porn, if you can make people want to jerk off and come, you can make some money, right? And it's pretty direct. It's this for that. It's very honest. You know, like this is my butthole. You know, it's straight up. But to make money in hating porn, you have to like scam charities and scam congressmen and make it look like there's trafficking, human trafficking going on where there isn't. And then steal from your own nonprofit that fights, you know, if you like Trafficking Hub is just a way for a very few select people to make a shit ton of money scamming everybody, making them think Pornhub has something to do with human trafficking. And it, of course it can't, it's impossible, but it to the untrained eye or someone who's not in porn, they might be like, oh, porn, human trafficking. Okay. I could see how those two things might be connected. Okay. I'll give you my money. I'll donate to that. That sounds scary. And then they pocket the money. They just take it. It's not going any, it's terrible. So it's like this huge scam. So I'm hoping that gets exposed more, that like the Nicosi and Exodus Cry and Trafficking Hub and all of them kind of get like CNN, CBS, ABC News exposed to like, wow, these people stole all your money. That sucks, you know, and gets exposed for whatever perverted stuff they're up to. Like Lindsey Graham is a politician who's like very outwardly anti-sex work, anti-porn, but is also known as Lady G in the gay escort community because Lindsey Graham puts on a dress and a wig and calls themselves Lady G and gets a bunch of gay hookers like regularly. So he's like a great client if you're a gay escort. So,
wow, that's interesting.
So it's kind of like, and it's so prevalent. My big brother is a lobbyist and he is not a pervert at all. We're very different. He's a great guy, a really good dude, but he's just not interested in strippers and porn and stuff like that. Like me, he's just a lobbyist. He knows Lindsey Graham. His nickname is Lady G.
Wow.
Like even on the Hill, like I thought, I was like, dude, you know about Lady G, Lindsey Graham thing? He's like, oh yeah, everybody calls him Lady G. Yeah. He's fucking weird, dude. No one likes him. And I'm like, and that's my brother's like, that's what he does for work. He's a lobbyist in DC. He works on the Hill, you know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of, create. So I'm hoping in the age of everything gets exposed everywhere, that gets exposed. I think that is that will help the cause, you know.
And I'd actually like to end this on that note, since it looks like we kind of lost Kai for a little bit again. So like our title suggests, Seat of Your Pants, that's this podcast. We are flying by the seat of our pants. So let me ask you real quick here, Lance, how can people find you? What's the best way to reach you?
Yeah. I'm wearing the shirt. I actually didn't even mean to do this, wear my own shirt, but this is what I wore today. Pervout.com. Just go there. And okay, that's my porn network. There's links to my Instagram and Twitter, and there's a contact us page. If people want to model for Pervout, they can fill out a form and do, you know,
awesome. So
you get me on Pervout. That's it.
Okay. Well, you heard it there, folks. Pervout. Yeah. P-E-R-V-O-U-T. Pervout.com.
Yeah.
That's where you can find Lance. That's where you can learn how you can work with him. And that's how you can look at his porn.
Yeah.
And I want to thank you very much for joining us today on Seat of Your Pants, Lance. And I look forward to seeing you soon.
Yeah. Cool. All right. I'll see you soon. Bye-bye.